DW Africa Link.
Hello and a very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. This broadcast is also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, so please engage with us on that platform. Coming up, it's a new dawn in Sudan after President Omar al-Bashir is overthrown by the military after nearly 30 years in power.
I am announcing here as Defense Minister and head of the Supreme Security Council. We are removing this regime and detaining its head after he was arrested in a safe zone.
Also on the program, Pope Francis meets South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and his political rival Riek Machar for a spiritual retreat. We will be talking to our correspondent in Rome.
By bringing these two leaders together, Pope Francis also wants to cast a light on this conflict, because it's one of these parts of the world that often gets overlooked in the mainstream press.
We are keeping an eye on what exactly will come out of that retreat and other stories making headlines across the globe. But first, news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Sudan's army has ousted President Omar al-Bashir in a coup. The military said that al-Bashir was under arrest in, quote, a safe place, and the military council was now in control of the country. The ousting comes after months of demonstrations. Protest leaders said they would not recognize the military coup and would continue taking to the streets. The United Kingdom's deadline to have a proper agreement to leave the European Union has been pushed back to October 31st. The UK had been due to leave the EU this Friday. European Council President Donald Tusk said the extra time will give the UK a chance to agree to leave the Union in an orderly way.
Let me finish with a message to our British friends. This extension is as flexible as I expected and a little bit shorter than I expected, but it's still enough to find the best possible solution. Please do not waste this time.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been arrested in London. He had been living in the Ecuadorian embassy under asylum since 2012 in order to avoid extradition to the United States. Ecuadorian President Lenin Moreno said Assange violated the terms of his asylum after material about a corruption investigation into the president appeared on the website.
Que la conducta irrespetuosa y agresiva del señor Julian Assange.
The discourteous and aggressive behavior of Mr. Julian Assange, the hostile and threatening declarations of his allied organization against Ecuador, and above all, the transgression of international treaties have led the situation to a point where the asylum of Mr. Assange is unsustainable and no longer viable. Ecuador has sovereignly decided to terminate the diplomatic asylum granted to Mr. Assange in 2012.
Assange appeared in a London court shortly after his arrest. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The World Bank estimates that the direct economic losses from Cyclone Idai in Mozambique range between $656 and $773 million. That figure applies to damage to buildings, infrastructure, and agriculture. It does not take reduced productivity or business interruptions into account. South Korea's Constitutional Court has ruled that the law criminalizing abortion in the country is unconstitutional. The law banned abortion in most cases and made doctors and patients liable for criminal charges if it was performed. The ruling will likely lead to an easing of South Korea's abortion laws, but the court said the law could stay in place until the end of the year. And in sports, Ajax Amsterdam tied Juventus in Champions League quarterfinal action, one goal apiece. Cristiano Ronaldo scored for Juventus at the end of the first half, and David Neres put the two teams level at the beginning of the second half. Barcelona beat Manchester United thanks to a Luke Shaw own goal. Europa League play resumes tonight with all four quarterfinal matches, including Benfica hosting Eintracht Frankfurt. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
Welcome back to the program. We are broadcasting live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Nyinge.
And my name is Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome to those of you listening to us on our partner radio stations and on our Facebook page, TW Africa. To mention but a few names, Gita Kabiro, who is talking about Sudan Prosperity J, and many more.
Thanks so much for keeping us company. We really appreciate it. So after nearly 30 years in power, Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir was today overthrown by the military after months of protest. In an address on state television, Defense Minister, who is the Army Chief General Awad Ibn Auf, announced that they had also arrested al-Bashir.
The defense minister also declared a three-month state of emergency and further disclosed that the military will rule for 2 years, followed by elections. The country's airspace will also be closed for 24 hours and the border shut until further notice. We take a quick look into the developments that led to the current situation. Anna Hoon gives us an overview.
Freedom, chant the protesters in the Sudanese capital Khartoum as they are celebrating. The civilians see that their demands have been finally met. Since mid-December last year, Sudan has witnessed sustained protests that were initially sparked by a tripling of bread prices and a shortage of basic goods. The protests have turned into a movement against the former ruling president Omar al-Bashir. But the roots of the protest go years back, said Khalid Medani from the Institute of Islamic Studies.
So at least since 2010, beginning with the youth movements, there was already a concerted plan to coordinate across different classes, different regions, different ethnic groups, different racial groups. So this has been many years in the making. And what you see now, despite the fact that many will say that it's a spontaneous kind of street revolution, that is far from the case.
Before he had to step down, al-Bashir has been backed by high-ranked military officers and the National Intelligence Security Services, as well as Islamic hardliners. The police forces eventually changed fronts and started to protect the civilians so that they remained undisturbed, even while protesting outside the army headquarters. Also, the middle and lower-ranking military gave an active aid and actually coordinated with the protesters. In the end, the defense minister announced the step down of al-Bashir.
I am announcing here as defense minister and head of the Supreme Security Council. We are removing this regime and detaining its head after he was arrested in a safe zone.
For international support, the protesters had to wait for quite a while. The U.S. has a strong interest in counterterrorism, which the former government of al-Bashir coordinated with them. The EU is concerned about immigration from Sudan to Europe. The U.K., the U.S. and Norway yesterday have decided to speak out in favor of the Sudanese protesters, unlike the neighboring Arab countries.
The other important element, of course, are the Arab countries, and these are countries that essentially are very concerned about the kind of ripple effect, you know, kind of transition from authoritarianism to democracy. I mean, they phrase it in terms of destabilization of the region, but I think it's really much more about a democratic country neighboring these Arab countries.
The neighboring countries fearing a domino effect is one of the aspects that has to be taken in account when thinking about Sudan's future. The question remains, what will the future of the country look like?
Thanks so much, Anna Hoon, for that report. And now to expound further on what that means, I'm joined by Ahmed Soliman, Horn of Africa researcher at Chatham House. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, how do you see this playing out? Will there be a peaceful transition?
I think what is clear from the forces who have been backing the protest movement, including the Sudanese Professional Association, who have come out over the last few hours very vocally, and many of the opposition political groups who are allied with them in the Declaration for Freedom and Change, is that they are continuing to call for an inclusive transitional civilian government. And they want to ensure that the government, the army, hands over to a government that is led by the people. So I think if we see an announcement that doesn't include a proposal for such a transition, then the protests are likely to continue.
And are these protesters affiliated to a certain political party?
There is an alliance, essentially, of parties now. So what we've seen is the Sudanese Professional Association, which is not overtly a political force, becoming a political force. So this is made up of, you know, educated doctors, teachers, you know, engineers, people from unions of other professions who have come together to say we want change and we're going to work for change and reform in Sudan. So they have been dictating the protest movement. So again, no clear leadership has emerged from them, but they have what they have is a platform, really, and an organizing center to work on and alternative policies for the country. And so they, I would assume, would, you know, be the legitimate voices of any civilian transition in the country because of their broad breadth of the alliance.
Now, another thing, Ahmed, we've seen most of the protesters in Sudan are young people, and it was also young people who recently pushed Algeria's president Abdulaziz Bouteflika out of power. Should other presidents who many feel have overstayed in their positions, like Paul Biya of Cameroon and the likes of Yoweri Museveni in Uganda, have something to worry about?
I think presidents will do, and I think, you know, the clear thing here is we're seeing generational change taking place after leaders' governments being in power for over a quarter of a century, and that's something that's natural. I think also that the current dynamics that we see socially and demographically within African countries plays a role in that.
I was speaking to Ahmed Suleiman, a Horn of Africa researcher at Chatham House.
And of course, we have many of your comments, those of you listening to us live. Vumbia Omugave is writing to us and saying, "Hello, DW. Thanks for the good news of Omar's downfall."
And we have this one from Sophie Mbogwa. She says, "It's a beautiful, bright day for Sudan." So keep talking to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Pope Francis has urged South Sudanese President Salva Kiir and his former deputy turned rebel leader Riek Machar to commit to forming a unity government next month.
The Pope had invited the two leaders in Rome in a last-ditch attempt to heal bitter divisions. We are now joined by our correspondent in Rome, Megan Williams. Megan, what do we know so far about this meeting?
We know that this is both a political and spiritual meeting. This meeting was called by Pope Francis, as well as the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. They want to bring about peace in South Sudan, where, as we know, some 400,000 people have died and more than 2 million people have been uprooted and forced to flee their homes in the country. And they want to bring these two people together before May 18th, which is when conceivably they are supposed to form a government together with President Kiir in the main role and Riek Machar as the vice president.
You just mentioned that the meeting was both spiritual and political. Do we know so far how it was conducted? Because many people are curious.
The meeting was held where Pope Francis lives in Santa Marta, which is a guest house inside the Vatican. And apparently there's supposed to be a lot of prayer, but as well as talk. There are other religious leaders from South Sudan, which is a predominantly Christian country. They'll be there as well as some political players from that country.
It is a first forthright attempt by the Catholic Church, rather by the Pope inviting warring parties for prayer and reflection. What is the main reason behind this?
I think the main reason is a pope that's very concerned about this part of the world. By bringing these two leaders together, Pope Francis also wants to cast a light on this conflict because it's one of these parts of the world that often gets overlooked in the mainstream press.
That is Megan Williams reporting or telling us what is happening in Rome. And we have been getting your comments. Uche Oji says we must be optimistic about South Sudan.
And Chenuso Idika says the late leader, Dr. John Garang, must be ashamed of these two selfish leaders. So tell us what you think about that retreat. This is Africa Link.
In case you've just joined us, you are listening to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Farah Nyambura.
And I'm Jen Nyinge. Thank you to all of our listeners on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, Kenyan families to sue Boeing for the Ethiopian plane crash.
My anger comes in because they are putting profits before life. We don't have to have such a tragedy because it's very painful.
We will also get to hear the story of one inspirational boy who is building models of houses from scrap metals.
But first we head to Nigeria. Up to 10,000 people have been forcibly evacuated because of a military operation against Boko Haram in northeast of the country.
The United Nations has, however, raised concerns that the residents of Jacana were moved to Maiduguri in the middle of the night without even collecting their personal belongings. I talked to our correspondent there, Mohammed Alamin, about the situation on the ground. It starts with the sound of the director of emergency management. Take a listen.
NEMA notice on our office was in receipt of a report that there was an influx of IDPs to Maiduguri metropolis as a result of military evacuation of residents of Jakarta to Maiduguri, to be precise, to Bakassi camp. NEMA, as coordinating agency of humanitarian response in the country, immediately sent in a situation report to the Director General of NEMA and recommended the need for the agency to provide humanitarian assistance with the IDPs in form of food and non-food items.
We were just listening to the sound of Saidu Ahmed, who is in charge of emergency, and he was talking about the influx of IDPs. In the reports that we're just reading, some of the people left even without shoes on their feet. How is the case for these people who are forced out, or rather were evacuated by the military?
Definitely these people are in a pathetic situation. Most of them lived in an open space without shelter, food, water, and medical for more than 2 days now. And most of them are women and children. You know, we are in the very hot season. The weather is harsh. These people are in a terrible situation, if I may say. Children are not going to school. Business were closed. Everything come to a standstill. If you consider 10,000 people living in the town and a huge number, so almost everything, as far as life is concerned, has been disrupted.
Talking about it, how bad is the security situation in Jakarta?
The security situation there is bad, actually. What I know is motorists are flying on the road, and it's the only safe road that one can follow that link Maiduguri and other parts of the country. From what I understand, we all follow this road without any fear, but only the securities can tell what actually the security situation is.
Well, as we know, President Muhammadu Buhari had to cut short his trip to the United Arab Emirates to address the rising cases of violence in the northwest of the country. But has the government come up with clear plans on how they plan to fight Boko Haram and tackle insecurity?
Well, this is a normal routine, if I may call it, because the government has been saying they are doing their best to cut out the situation, but there is no result yet. Even 2 days ago, these insurgents attempted to attack Damaturu, which is the state capital of Yobe. But even though the military foiled the attack, and they claim to have killed so many of the Boko Haram insurgents. But the situation is worse in other parts of the region. Boko Haram are flying everywhere without any challenges from the security personnel, if I may say.
That's our correspondent in Maiduguri, Mohammed Alamin. Thank you for that report.
Speaking out.
Kenyan families who lost relatives in the Ethiopian airline crash now want Boeing held liable in a case filed in the U.S. citing negligence. Through a consortium of Kenyan and American lawyers, the families of the 36 Kenyans who died claim the aircraft operated by Ethiopian Airlines had faulty systems and are speaking out on behalf of their loved ones who died.
The Boeing 737 MAX 8 plane airlines en route from Addis Ababa to Nairobi went down shortly after takeoff, killing all 157 people on board. Susan Holton has this report by Catherine Omwantho.
So the government to come in, the rule, and that was not where defense needed. Do not take that for defense.
60-year-old John Karanja lost five members of his family, his wife, his daughter, and three grandchildren. They were among the 157 people killed in last month's Ethiopian Airlines crash. The remaining members of the Karanja family have yet to come to terms with the situation, as John Karanja explains.
Here we are talking of a situation whereby you have not buried any part of your loved ones. It was a memorial service, and whatever you have later come up with is a monument. So, it keeps reminding you.
As he waits for the remains of his relatives, John Karanja is keeping up to date with news regarding the crash. He even has a hard copy of Boeing CEO Dennis Muhlenberg's condolences, but that brings little comfort.
Now, I need clarification why they never resolved the issue, because now they are ready to rectify the situation. So why didn't they do that in the first instance? Yes, I accept his apology, but still, there is a lot of pain.
The Karanja family now plans to sue Boeing. Quindos Karanja Jr. spoke out to DW about his feelings.
They put profit before life, okay? And the worst thing is, this is happening. It has happened not once, but twice, okay? So at least they need to be held accountable and to also be hit where it matters most. Because see, if they're putting profit before life, then we need to go after their profit.
Each family of the victims of the Ethiopian plane crash was given soil from the crash site to bury. But the Karanjas decided not to. Instead, they built a memorial with photographs of their loved ones. And they hope that eventually they will have remains to bury.
Susan Holton there with that report by Kathleen Omwantho in Nairobi, Kenya, and she was able to visit the Kenyan families of who lost relatives in the Ethiopian airline crash.
U-Zone.
And now let's talk about young people. As we know, Africa has one of the youngest population, and it's expected to double by 2055, according to the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP. Although youths make up about 77% of the population, they remain the most vulnerable, and half of them are unemployed.
However, young people are rising up to challenge with the few resources they have. DW's Evelyn Pade caught up with one 15-year-old who is using the available resources to construct beautiful models of houses with different designs.
At 15 years, Jeremiah Soma is not an ordinary child. When his friends are out playing, he spends hours doing what he loves most. He constructs models of houses from scrap materials. He collects around like cartoons, papers, and sticks. Soma then uses his own glue, which he makes from sponge and gas, to build miniature houses with different designs.
Two-story businesses, bedroom apartment.
This is a two-story building with a six-bedroom apartment. This is the porch of the house, and this is the outside sitting place. There is also a swimming pool and a living room. It has a sink and an air conditioner. I would sell this for 20 USD. It also has lights all around it.
Also, we have the light all around it. Mr., please give me my resort player.
Soma aspires to be a construction engineer. However, his main worry is that His parents may not be able to afford paying this course because he comes from a poor background.
Most of our children of Liberia.
Most of us children in Liberia have great talents, but our parents do not have money to send us to good schools, and our talents are dying. I would appeal to those who are listening to help me develop my talent so I can help develop my country.
Build up my talent and develop my country.
His family members say he has been constructing this house since he was 13. Their auntie, Esther Dugley, and his sister, Maron Cooper, wish he could get more support to achieve his dreams.
I see Jeremiah building a house.
Jeremiah is my little brother. When I see him building that house, I feel both sad and happy because only our mother is taking care of us. Our father died, so I wish someone could help Jeremiah achieve his dream.
From now to 2021, I want Jeremiah to improve on what he is doing. So that's what I'm really praying for.
Like Soman, there are many young people in slums whose untapped talents have been never told of. Samuel Dwe, a member of the Liberia Association of Writers, has been supporting Soman to develop his talents. Dwe tells me investing into talented youth will impact families and poor communities.
And I think he will be a very great person because what I saw for a little boy, 15, to construct such a house with scraps, things that he collected from websites, and I think he'll be a great person. All we have to do is to help him. Talent gives money. I will give you an example. The current president of Liberia, Joshua Manuel, is a talented person for football. He became very popular and became a millionaire from football. But there are various talents in all our young people. For him, he has an architectural talent. So that I think if the talent is developed, so just imagine if such a young man has money, you definitely want to live a better life out of this slum community called Fiamma.
As I leave Rototown and bid Jeremiah farewell, I can only wish the African government invest more in young people like him with untapped potential and energy.
DW's Evelyn Padezipi, a good initiative there by a 15-year-old. And that is why I usually say young people are the future of Africa.
You're right. And this is what we are also saying here at DW Africa. We talk about 77% who are budding with potential and talent. If you want to know more about the 77% in Africa, go to our page, dw.com/Africa, and you can see what the young people are doing.
Absolutely. And now going back to a top story, it's a new dawn in Sudan after President Omar al-Bashir was overthrown by the military nearly 30 years in power. The defense minister also declared a three-month state of emergency and further disclosed that the military will rule for 2 years, followed by elections. The country's airspace will also be closed for 24 hours and border shut until further notice.
Yes, Jane, and we have many responses, especially from our listeners in Cameroon, who are asking, when will it happen? For example, there's someone here by the name Jean Fotso, who is saying, why do Cameroonians pray and God answers in Sudan?
An interesting one there. And we have Seto Latte. He says, I pray that Togolese army learns from this and it stands to deliver their people. A dictator is nothing if the army is not supporting them.
Yeah, the responses are also a little bit funny. We have Paul Pauls, who is saying, when we pray in Kenya, our prayers get answered elsewhere. This is not fair.
And Atema Kang says, a wind of change is moving from north to Central Africa. It's good making. And you know why he's saying this is because it's the young people who pushed Algeria's President Abdelaziz Bouteflika out of power. Now we are seeing this in Sudan too.
Yeah, not to underestimate also the role of women and what they are doing in this case or what they have done in Sudan. And we have another comment here who is saying, Rafael L. is saying, Algeria, Sudan, next country, please. Nigerians, what are you still waiting for?
Thanks so much for that comment. Romeo Ajay says Bashir should face war crimes. He has a lot of blood on his hands. And that issue of ICC might come up. At the moment, he's under house arrest, according to the defense minister.
Yeah, you're right, Jane. There's a lot happening there. And we have Les Lay. This is also one of our Cameroonian listeners, as I said. He is saying next it should be Paul Biya of Cameroon. He's saying his regime is committing serious atrocities at the watch of the UN, AU, and the international communities.
Gu Victor Chung is asking if the secret hand of the West is not there, it's a wonderful thing for him to step down. If it is the games they played in Libya and want him down so that they can come for oil, I will say no.
Yeah, so thank you very much for your comment. You can continue with this debate on DW Africa. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.
DW, made for minds.